All right, everyone, thank you so much for being on the training call we're doing today. This is a really good training call if you are a newer rep or even if you aren't and you're just jumping back into the business. Really, the topic of this training call is how to deal with a borrower in general. We're going to kind of get into some other things, but I really wanted to do this call with everyone because, you know, I, along with other members of management, I do see short forms that are coming in and stuff, and it's really important that we set realistic expectations with the borrowers right up front just so it doesn't cause problems in the end. But let's get into this. So the topic of this is going to be how to deal with a borrower. The first bullet point everyone probably sees there is just really setting the tone of the meeting. I know we're chasing down people for leads. I chase down people for leads too every single day. You know, if someone needs me to call them on their time, I'll always do the best to do that. You guys decide your business hours. My business hours, I tell all borrowers, are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. If a borrower asks me to call them at 10 a.m., I'm not in the office then. And that's just because I have done this business 24/7 for the past 7 years. At some point, you do need some cutoff time in a life. So those are just my business hours I set with people. You can set your business hours whenever, and I realize people are working around regular jobs and stuff. But just to kind of set the tone of the meeting, you know, a lot of people will just think, you know, you're always going to be available whenever, you know, they need you to be available. Or also a lot of times borrowers think that, you know, because we offer such great customer service and we do give people quotes and we do give them so much information that I know no other shop is giving them, that we're always just going to be here. And you'll probably see I do a lot of follow-ups with people to get their documents and stuff. So what I am doing now is I will do at least 3 follow-ups with the borrower. I'll do 3 calls and 3 emails. But if they're unresponsive in 3 calls and they've told us they want to move right away, I'm deading the file. You know, they clearly don't want to move forward. I'll task the IEP and just let them know, hey, if you do get any documents from them, you know, send them over. I also, in my last follow-up email to the borrower, will just say nicely, we're just going to assume you probably already got financing. You know, if we can ever help you in the future, you know, please let us know. And sometimes cutting off that expectation that we're always going to be around actually triggers them to call me back. Well, hey, I'm sorry, I've just been traveling for a month. You know, this is going on in my life. Hey, no big deal. You know, if you could just send us an email update just letting us know. One thing that is kind of crazy about this business and any business is if someone's just not interested, I would just love for them to say, hey, I'm not interested, instead of us following up so many times. And that's kind of why we have, like, the 3 follow-up rule. A lot of times you'll see borrowers just don't do that. And they just, I guess, want you to keep hanging around for a while. So if any of you have seen me do that, me, Ryan, or Chris, or any of the other members of management, just kind of not, I don't want to say cut someone off, but nicely just let them know, you know, we have followed up with you a certain amount of times. We're just going to assume you got financing. That's the only reason why. They have to understand that we're here. We're ready to do a deal. You have a short form, you get a deal, and you're in a purchase sales agreement, or you already own the property to refinance, I'll get you a quote within 24 hours, provided this isn't some crazy, crazy, complicated property type, which may take a little bit longer to get a quote. And we tell you right away the documents we need. We move so quick. People just don't, I think a lot of people don't understand. They think it's going to be this complicated moving forward process. It's not. You know, I just need the information, and we're ready to go. I can tell them what we can do, what we can't. So next bullet point, setting realistic lending expectations. I see a lot of people submitting short forms, and I know we went over this last week, but the borrower, I've gotten several short forms where the borrower had $10. That's not going to work. You know, not on any deal. I know we've done lender calls where they're advertising up to 100% financing on rehab deals, fix and flips. Those are the only lenders that really have that 100% financing thing. There's I've never heard of 100% ground-up construction on an investment property, and permanent financing lenders don't do 100% financing either. There are very, very competitive fix and flip programs out there, but just remember, almost all those programs have very, very heavy liquidity requirements. If you actually read the details of the programs, and they are very detailed, you'll actually see they have to have 10, 15% of the loan amount in liquid cash. You will see all these programs do require still heavy liquidity, because there's always things that go wrong during construction. They do require good FICO, and they do require a lot of experience. So set realistic lending expectations with the person. Don't ever promise one rate and terms. If you don't know, what you just need to say to the client is, hey, I just need to get a little bit of information from you so I can really explain the deal to management, and we'll have an offer to you within 24 hours. I want to just mention, if the borrower is not in a purchase and sales agreement, and I see some of you doing this, so it's great. If they're not in a purchase and sales agreement, we can't get them a direct quote from any of our lenders. It's just causing a problem with a lot of our lenders. They don't want to keep quoting, and then the borrower ends up not entering into a purchase and sales agreement because it didn't work out between the borrower and seller. So we don't want to upset them. If the person is like die hard that they need some type of pre-approval in order to enter into a purchase and sales agreement, just let me know. Just let me know. That's fine. If they need some type of pre-approval, and typically that's going to happen on like a rehab deal, I'm going to need a tri-merge credit report on them, a bank statement proving they have the funds to close plus closing costs, and a bio. I need to see what type of experience they have, and I have a blank bio if they need it. So I'm going to need something from someone in order to get them a pre-approval if they're not in a purchase and sales agreement. But people that are in a purchase and sales agreement, we will get them quotes, and people that already own the property and want to refinance, we will certainly get them quotes as well. So really studying the product sheet is really, really, really important. Just so everyone can understand LTVs associated with different types of loans, you have to have down money to buy investment property. That's just how this business works. You know, if there was a way to just buy a ton of properties or hotels and casinos with no money down, believe me, I would own every single property in the country. I would have figured it out by now. There's not. You have to have money to play in this business, unfortunately. And you really have to have experience as well for certain properties. But experience is also key. So we went over setting realistic expectations. We already went over, you know, pointing them to the proper place in the product sheet. You know, let people know, if they're looking for a rehab loan, rehab rates and terms start on page 13. And I just sent a new updated company information email out to everyone and attached a revised product sheet because I had to revise several of our programs. You know, lenders change things all the time. We're doing a different fixed term now. This property has to be this value in this town. So that will forever be a work in progress, because if they change something, I have to change it too. So we're up on the current programs. But I really like where our product sheet is at now. It's really robust. It has a lot of great programs on it. You know, the bank stuff at the top, you know, I've thought about changing that around, but I want to stick permanent financing together. But, you know, bank loans are not our thing. If it is a higher loan amount, $1 million plus, we'll certainly get involved, because that's what banks like to see. Or if it is a program that would fit, or a deal that would fit into one of those bank-type programs, that's great. But our main sections of the product sheet are always going to be the bank alt section, and that starts on page 6. Those are also permanent financing loans, but for borrowers that are not bankable for one reason or another. Maybe they just don't want to wait the 90 days for the banking process to close. And the fix and flip. Those are the bread and butter of what we do, and that's where you're going to make the most money. And the fix and flip programs start on page 13. So when someone's asking you rates and terms, just point them right to that point on the product sheet. Also, again, we have the company information email, so if you could send that to them along with the product sheet, that gives them a clear idea of what we do here. There was one other thing I wanted to point out on here that I did not write down. Of course, I can't remember it right now, but okay, we already went over that. Okay, and we already went over don't promise rates and terms. Let management do that. Okay, let's just move on. In terms of the short forms, I know they're changing. Everyone's probably seen them changing. Our CTO, Anthony, is updating them. We do have paper versions of the short forms as well, and I always keep paper versions just in case something goes down the website or it's not working right or whatever. I think it's only ever happened to us once in several years, but it's just a backup plan. I always like to have backup plans here. I'll also send out the paper versions to everyone as well. I personally like filling them out, the paper word versions of the short forms. That's how I do it. You can do a paper version and submit it to processing and just write an email, or you can do it on the website, whatever works for you. But I do want to be aware that there are paper versions as well, and again, I will send them out. Just do make sure every single line of the short form is filled out, and believe me, we're not asking those questions just to ask extra questions. There's a lot of things I see not filled out on certain short forms, such as the borrower's home address. Do they own or rent? If you don't want to put the borrower's full home address, that's fine. I just need to know the town and state they live in. Once we get the deal going anyways, I'm going to have a copy of their driver's license. I'm going to see their home address. But really, the reason why we ask that question is because certain lenders we work with will not do a deal for a borrower if it's an out-of-state property. So if I see their home address is the same state as the investment property they're looking to buy or refinance, I've already answered that question. That's why we ask that. Owning or rent is a huge thing, you know. Sometimes we'll get submissions in where someone's trying to buy a $4 million property and they rent, and their rent's like $500 a month. I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. I'm just saying, you know, it kind of paints the picture of who are you dealing with here. You know, if someone's trying to buy a very large property, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with renting, but you would assume they're probably living in a decent area where their rent's more than $500 a month if they're trying to do that. So all the questions of the short form are really, really, really important. So please just answer all of them because we're going to need you to. And again, I'll get everyone the paper versions because I know that the websites are changing. And again, just so you have them as a backup just in case anything were ever to go down. Okay, next bullet point. There's a lot of times, and this has taken me a very long time to deal with borrowers. It's certainly an art in dealing with borrowers because all of us want to provide the most customer service. It sucks saying no to somebody. I get it. I do this every single day, too. So I don't want anyone to think that I don't talk to borrowers. All I do all day is talk to borrowers. I can't talk to every single borrower. Thank you for everyone for helping me take these leads and stuff. But I do talk to a lot of borrowers during the day, and I talk to all the IAP borrowers as well if they have good real deals. But, you know, a lot of times, when you're filling out a short form, again, if you're using the website, it's going to prompt you, and you're going to have to go in the website's order. That's how it works. But if you're using the paper version, you can really ask the questions in the order you want to ask the questions in. That's another reason I like paper versions. I of course, get their contact information, the important stuff. I want to know they're closing in a corporate entity because it's a commercial loan. Most lenders require that. I want to know who owns the entity. I will get that stuff up top, but then I really jump into what's the property type, and if it's a purchase, I really ask them, you know, how much money are you planning to contribute to this project? And I say it like that. How much money are you planning to contribute to this project? Not can you contribute. Like, I lead into that you are going to have to contribute money to this project. And if someone just doesn't have the money, I understand everyone may not understand LTVs right now, especially if you're new, and that's fine, you know. But if a person doesn't have the money, what I really say to them is, you know, hey, on a rehab deal, most lenders want 20% down plus closing costs, plus you have to have reserves. So if that's not the amount of money they have, what I say to them is, do you have other investment properties? Maybe we can refi cash you out on that, you know, to get you the extra money. If they don't, my next go-to point is there another real estate investor in your area you can partner with? You know, I always try to offer solutions if they don't have it. I used to feel bad kind of telling people that they just don't have a deal, whether it's an experience thing or a lack of money thing. And it's really the only two reasons why someone doesn't have a deal. It can be a credit thing as well. If someone's credit is just horrible, like I saw someone's credit last week that was in the 400s. I can't really sell that to a hard money lender because these are temporary financing loans, because the first question they come back and ask me is, Megan, how are they going to refinance out? How do they get out of our loan? And I know it's going to be very hard for them to get their credit up. And in terms of permanent financing, you really need a 650 to get out into a takeout loan. So I don't have an answer to that because I know it's almost going to be impossible for them to get out of that loan. So those are really the main three things. You know, it's credit, money, if it's a purchase, experience. If someone's buying a really unique property type, like a gas station or a hotel or something like that, something that someone doesn't buy every single day. They should really have experience running a property like that. So don't feel bad if you have to tell someone that they just don't have a deal. What you can do is do what I do. Just blame it on the lenders. Just say, hey, you know, the lenders we work with really like you to have this amount of down money, this, or they really want a property type, really need you to have this type of experience. But you can always offer a solution. You know, say to them, is there another real estate investor in the area you can partner with that has the experience, especially if it's a ground-up construction deal? And I really just want to stick to the 1-4 unit ground-up construction deals because those themselves are so hard to get done. If you don't have ground-up construction experience, it's almost impossible to get your loan done. We do have 2 ground-up construction lenders, actually, we work with that will go off the contractor's experience. So that is a possibility, but they're going to then require more down money from the borrower. So there's this give and take in this business, you know, where some things can fly, but then they're going to tighten up the requirements over here. So that's just the point. If you have to tell someone it's not a deal, don't feel bad. That is really how I do it. You know, I offer some solutions. If those possibilities are not possible for them, you know, I really just let them know, you know, once they can, you know, find a partner or once they can get their credit up, we can certainly help them. But right now, you know, according to the lender's criteria that we work with, again, kind of brushing it off on the lender, I'm not going to be able to get it done for you. You know, sorry. So don't feel bad about it. It is what it is. I'd love to save everyone too, but you can't. And that's just the nature of this business. Okay, we did that. We already kind of went over everyone that someone needs money, down money on a purchase. Again, I know we do a lot of lender calls, especially with the fix and flip lenders that really advertise these very, very high LTVs. But just please keep in mind, that is going to be for the most awesome ideal deal where there's huge profit, the person has great FICO, they have great experience, and that person's still going to have a good amount of cash on hand. If someone has no money, no experience, and is looking for 100% financing, it's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. And you also have to understand, too, when we do these lender calls with lenders, I love doing them with them. I love learning about their programs because it enables me to create marketing materials from their programs they give us, which helps all of us advertise. But they're always going to sell us the highest LTV because they want us to bring them deals. And we want to bring them deals, but we want to bring them real deals as well. Next one, don't try to sell someone that can't be sold. There's going to be times where you call a borrower, a lead that we give you, you know, maybe it's a lead we give you, or somehow where whoever you get in contact with, and they just tell you, hey, I already have contacts with direct lenders, you know, I love your company, you guys have so many options, love the customer service, understand you're a broker, but I just don't need a broker right now because I already work direct with lenders and I have a great relationship with them. They have great rates and terms for me. That's okay. You know, don't try to sell them that we can do something magnificent that we can. I mean, if they already have a direct lender connection and there's nothing wrong with their lender, there's no need for them to switch. You know, so what happens to me when I love when people are honest with me. I would love for someone to just tell me, hey, Megan, I already have a connection. I'm good for now. If anything does happen with my current lender, though, and they falter and maybe it's not working out, I'd love to try some of the lenders you guys work with, and I'd love the fact that you'd quarterback the deal for me. I'd rather someone just tell me that than someone string me along and say, hey, I'm going to move forward, and they never do, and we call them and follow up with them 5-10 times. So if someone's upfront with you like that, that's great. Give them our company information email. Again, attach it to the product sheet. Move on. You know, there's too many people out there where we get too many leads in as well. There's no reason to sell them if they can't be sold is the point. Don't be too salesy. You know, this is like a financial business. You know, we are offering them a financial solution to their unique lending situation. So it's either going to work for them or it's not. I'm very, very upfront with borrowers when we set expectations with them and in the program details, as many of you probably have seen. You know, when someone submits a short form, and I will always respond via email to them to give them the program details. If I know it's a slam dunk deal, I may even go and get them a quote right away and put that in the email. but I'm very upfront with them on how this program is going to work and the closing time expectation, when appraisals are paid for, they're paid for upfront, when closing costs are paid for, they're all paid at closing. So always want to do that. Always just want to be very upfront with your borrowers so they know exactly what is going to go on with the deal and how it's going to go down so anyone doesn't have realistic expectations. Next section is kind of going over how to control your borrower. I don't want to say, like, be rude or be firm with anybody because that's not what's meant by this at all. But I guess why I put that in here as well is to just let people have realistic expectations of the business. I want to give you guys a couple of examples. So we have a deal going on right now with a borrower where he actually has a loan with Wells Fargo that he wanted to subordinate to our new loan. And the lender we actually took him to did allow that, which most lenders don't. They were going to allow the subordination. So when I went into the transaction with him and the IAP, we were all under the impression that the subordination was not going to be a problem. He was very confident in my calls with him and in his emails that it wasn't going to be a problem. Then we finally get to the point where in the deal, we're really here at the end, appraisals are back, everything, where title has to finally submit all the subordination documents to Wells Fargo to officially get it approved. Here I thought that was kind of already in the works because if our loan is contingent on the subordination being approved, why wouldn't we have started that process prior? But again, I guess just some miscommunication there. So anyways, a lot of back and forth between the title company, us, the lender, with all the docs that we need to provide to get this subordination approved. I provide all the docs that we have on our end to get it approved. So does the title company. We wait for some time, and Wells Fargo denies it. The borrower comes back and is upset. I don't want to say he was upset at us. I understand he was venting, but that not being approved had nothing to do with 11 Capital Finance. Wells Fargo is a very large bank. Everyone's very aware of that. They make all of their own decisions. I have no influence on their decisions. So really, with the subordination not being approved, he's going to get less cash out is the point on this deal. And he was pretty upset. But again, setting the right realistic expectations, I didn't send him any type of – he sent me a pretty – I don't want to say rude email, but stern email being upset that it didn't get approved and this has taken a long time. But, I just said, sir, I understand. And I related to him in the email. I've had bad experiences with Wells Fargo myself, and I have. I've had very bad banking experiences with them. But unfortunately, Wells Fargo is its own independent entity. 11 Capital has no decision-making power over Wells Fargo. If you'd like to move forward, we'd love to complete the transaction for you. I encouraged him. I think it would just be great to just pay them off anyways, considering you've been a customer with them over 10 years and they decided to deny the subordination. But just kind of setting those expectations because people in this business will come at you, and it's not something you have any control over. If a property doesn't appraise, we have no control over that. On every single deal I do with everyone's borrower, I always ask them, please provide me comps. If you can please provide me comps, I can give them to the lender prior, and they can pass them on to the appraiser. If anyone could guess, how many borrowers ever send me comps? None. Maybe one out of 20 borrowers will send me some comps because they don't want to submit the extra documentation because it's going to take up their time. But then when the appraiser doesn't come back, I have no leg to stand on. I'm not an appraiser. I'm not a real estate investor. I'm not a realtor. I don't even live in that area. I don't know. Unless you give me the proof, I have nothing to say. So it's just setting realistic expectations because there will be times in the transaction where the borrower is going to get frustrated. And I understand. There's a way to deal with all that, and thank God for all of you. I'm the one dealing with them most of the time, so it's not a problem. But just always one reason I want to bring up some of these things, too, is just knowing when someone can, I don't want to say bossy around, but when someone can be stern and when someone can't. There's certain things that someone certainly has every right to be upset about, and there's certain things they don't, An appraisal, title company not doing their job, subordination documents, certain things, that's not something that we have control over. Now, I can say we quarterback every deal, So I'm on the title company. I'm on the property insurance person. I'm on the lawyers. I'm on the realtors involved in the transaction. I'm on the HOA if there's an HOA involved in the transaction. If someone is not being cooperative, I tell the borrower right away, hey, I've called this person 2 or 3 times and not getting back to me. I need this from them to get your deal closed. So we always make the borrower aware of what's going on. What's another one I wanted to there's another example I wanted to give someone. Okay. Actually, I had a borrower this week that I talked to as well, and he was actually an accountant, and he was a very, 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 very bossy person. I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt because I know he's an accountant, so he wants to tell me everything in the world about lending and how he knows the business, and he probably kept me on the phone for about a half an hour telling me everything I didn't need to know, but I let him talk and do his thing. The IAP got his short form. I don't know how she did it, but you're a miracle worker for getting a short form from him and getting him to stay on topic. Basically, this guy has a single-family residence as an investment property. It doesn't debt service at all. If you compare the, you know, most lenders want the DSCR, the debt service coverage ratio, on a property in terms of commercial to be 1.25 or higher. His property debt service is like a 35% LTV. He's just not charging enough rent compared to the monthly taxes and insurance. So she sent me the short form. I sent him 3 different loan options back that same day. And I said to him, sir, I ran the numbers for you compared to the income expenses. This property only debt service is really only $150,000 loan amount. That's what it was. He's trying to get a $300,000 loan amount. And the property is worth, was worth about a decent amount. I think it was worth somewhere in the 500 range. So I said to him, look, I can get you pretty good interest rates, the 6% at the 150, because that lender I'm going to take you to is most certainly going to calculate a DSCR if they're going to give you a low 6% range. Or I have this program over here, loans under 500,000, there's no DSR analysis done, but you're not going to get that 8% or that 6% range. That lender is in the 8% because they do things that banks and the lenders don't do. That's just where their program is. Or he could go hard money if he wants, but that's not what he was looking for. But basically, I called him. I emailed him all of his options. I called him. I went over all of it with him, very, very detailed. And he literally just kept bullying me on the phone that he wanted the $300,000 loan amount and the 6% interest rate. And I explained to him very, very, very nicely, like 10 times, sir, you can't get that because this lender over here that does this low interest rate is going to do a DSCR analysis. And your accountant, I'm sure you understand that. The loan does not debt service there, you know. So the point to it is he kept me on the phone for about a half an hour, and he badgered me the whole entire time. And I was very nice, very professional to him. But at one point, I actually did excuse myself from the call. I just said, I actually have another call coming up. He kept going that he wants this, that we can't provide this and this and this. And I just kept reiterating to him, sir, here's your options in the marketplace. I know you want everything. I do too. But because the property does not debt service, I can get you the lower interest rate you want. It's going to be a lower loan amount. I can get you that higher interest rate, but it's not going to be at the interest rate you want. So if that ever does happen to you, just nicely excuse yourself from the call. I just said to him, I'm sorry, I do have another call scheduled. These are the options we can provide you. If you do see a fit at all, just let us know, send me an email, and we'd be happy to do your loan. And I nicely excuse myself from the call. So the point to that is too, don't ever let someone be really rude to you or boss you around. You have to, respect your own time. You're a person, you're a professional. We really don't get too many people like that. But again, we deal with the general public. So when you deal with the general public, you're going to unfortunately get all different types of people. And people are going to tell you, so many people you talk to, like accountants, lawyers, whoever they are, if they're some type of professional, another real estate investor, how much they know about this business. And they're going to go on and on and on sometimes. And just what I do is I just let that person talk. I give them a little bit of our company information. I send them our company email with our product sheet. And I just get the information from them, get them a short form, and just let them know if they do have a deal, I can get them a quote within 24 hours. And that's basically it about that. You know, basically the point about controlling your borrower is really knowing when to stick up for yourself as well. You know, we are customer service people, but we're also professionals. So someone is not going to just, you know, call one of our reps and just frantically scream at them. That's never going to work. Or if someone is very stern, like the gentleman I was speaking to, I guess, when I talked to him, Monday or Tuesday, the accountant that knew everything about lending but didn't understand the whole DSCR thing for some reason, you know, you do nicely have to push back. You can't let people walk all over you in this business or in any business, but there is a time to be, you know, stern and to set realistic expectations. That's exactly what I did with that gentleman. I explained to him his options in the marketplace, and he can either take those options or not. You know, he's just going to be spinning wheels. So another point is we're not going to be able to help everyone. If they just don't get it or just won't, you know, let their guard down to get it, then it's not a client that we're going to be able to help. And if they're that difficult in the beginning, I'll never get him to a close. I'll never get the documents I need from him. Every time I have to ask him for something, he's going to ask me why. I know exactly what direction that's going. Okay, and then we're going to wrap up just a couple quick Q&As that you're going to get asked, and then let's open it up for questions. But to kind of set a little bit more realistic expectations when you're dealing with borrowers, a lot of borrowers today, I think, do understand the appraisal process, that has to happen before closing, but there are some that don't. And I talk to borrowers every single day that are like, oh, I have to pay for the appraisal up front. Like, yeah, the appraiser has to get paid if they're going to get in the car and spend gas money and drive out there and appraise your property. So, yes, the only thing they ever pay up front these days is an appraisal. All of their closing costs, which are broker fee, lender fee, title insurance, property insurance, those are always your closing costs, are always paid at closing. And if it is a refi cash-out loan, that cash-out they're getting is going to go to cover those closing costs, so they're just going to be walking with less cash. We do work with a couple lenders that do BPOs, so it's not as much as an appraisal. A residential appraisal, so for 1 to 4 units, is somewhere around $500. Commercial appraisals, so 5-plus units or any other commercial building, you know, a self-storage facility, a strip mall, typically somewhere from $1,500 to sometimes even $3,000. It really just depends on how big the property is. I did a self-storage facility loan years ago, and the appraisal was $5,000. I know that's huge, but it was a huge building. It was a huge building, and the lender got 3 quotes from 3 qualified appraisers, and that was actually the lowest one, so it is what it is. But if anyone ever asks you the cost of appraisals, 1 to 4 unit residential properties, somewhere around $500. Obviously, the more units, it's going to go up a little bit. Commercial really kind of starts at $1,500 in that ballpark, but it can be higher if they have a very, very large property. We do have some lenders that do BPOs, but they only do BPOs on the 1 to 4 unit investment properties. I've never had a lender do a PPO on a pure commercial property. A BPO sometimes ranges around $300. I guess it depends whoever they're using. Not many of our lenders do BPOs. A very, very few of them do PPOs. And that's still paid up front, just so everyone's aware. It's always paid up front. Any type of evaluation of a property is always paid up front. We do have one lender, actually, that will do an evaluation of a property and have that paid at closing, but that's like one lender. So just don't ever tell people that. The evaluation fee for the property is always paid for up front. Their closing costs are always paid at closing on the day of closing. So borrowers are going to ask you, you know, what's my interest rate? Your response to that, or they're going to ask you, like, what's your rate? Everyone will always ask you that, what's your rate, what's your rate? And it's going to get to the point one day where it's going to drive you crazy, but don't let it. Just let them know. We do all types of commercial real estate loans here. You know, check out our company information and our product sheet, which I'm going to email you now. But all different types of loans come with different interest rates and different points. That's just how this works. They're not all the same. So, again, that product sheet is God. You know, please, please, please keep referring to it. When a borrower asks you, why do you need my personal documentation? Sometimes that will happen to you. Most borrowers understand that on a commercial loan, especially small balance commercial loans, which is really our bread and butter, someone has to personally guarantee that loan behind the entity. So we're always closing in an entity name, an LLC, S-Corp, C-Corp. I've even done a loan where you can close in a trust. But someone behind that entity still needs to personally guarantee. You know, someone still has to be responsible for those payments if that business goes out of business and files for bankruptcy one day or dissolves. So that's just always how it works. If someone tells you that's not how it works, they don't understand lending. And that's another part of setting a realistic expectation with a borrower. Sometimes borrowers are going to tell you how this business works, and they're so totally off. You're just going to have to word it nicely, because it happens to me every single day. I would say, you know, sir, ma'am, you know, really on small balance commercial loans like you have here, there's always a personal guarantee behind the deal. There are a couple of lenders that we have done lender calls with, and again, I know there's always these weird exceptions where sometimes they won't require a personal guarantee. I think two lenders out of like 110 we work with will do that once in a while, but it's gonna change your LTV is gonna severely drop, your interest rate is gonna go up. And that doesn't make any sense to me, because someone can't say, hey, I'm looking for the best rates and terms that I don't want to personally guarantee the loan. That's a red flag to me when I see that, because if you believe in your project so much and you know so much about it and it's going to appraise here and there, why would you not want to personally guarantee the loan? Why are you saying that you don't, you know, believe in it? And a lot of times I think when I talk to borrowers, they don't want to sometimes personally guarantee things because, first of all, it's not an option basically on 99% of transactions. So don't tell anybody they can't personally guarantee something. But a lot of times borrowers think that this new loan that we're going to do for them is going to show up on their credit report. And that's one reason I've noticed from borrowers they don't want to personally guarantee. Just so you know, most of the lenders we work with, probably about 90% of them, don't report to the credit bureaus. And again, the majority of lenders we work with are not banks, but they don't. So if that's their concern, just let me know. I'll check with that lender if I'm not sure which one we're going to send them to, but 90% of lenders we work with don't report to their credit bureaus. And I'm actually shocked by that. I would think even if you are a secondary market lender, a Velocity, a Lending Home, an Apex, or whoever you are, I would think you would report to the credit bureaus, but for some reason they don't. So if that's the problem with it showing up on their credit report, that's not really going to be a problem with the majority of lenders you work with. Next question is, borrowers are always going to ask you, how many points are you charging me? Again, this is going to be a question you're always asked, just like, what's my rate? Again, it depends on the file. It depends on what type of transaction we're doing for you. On ground-up deals and rehab deals, we always charge at least 2 points. And really, it's because a lot of those transactions are smaller balance transactions. Two points, we're not killing anybody with 2 points at all. When it comes to permanent financing loans, especially like the bank alternate spot, that can range from, we can't charge more than 5 on those transactions. But, again, your answer is going to be, it depends on the type of transaction. You know, you're going to refer them again to the product sheet. Although on our product sheet, the points that are listed there are only lender points. I don't put broker points on our product sheet because these things could change. I price deals on how many options I know the borrower has out there. You know, like if you have an IRS issue or a tax lien, I know you have very, very minimal options out there. So it's going to be priced accordingly. It depends where your FICO is. It depends how quickly you need to close. To be frank, it really depends on I know how many options they have. There's so many rehab options out there. There's so many fix and flip lenders out there that's why I am more conservative on points. You know, typically it's just 2 because I know that there's so many options out there for them if they do have the appropriate amount of down money and experience and FICO and stuff like that. My goal, honestly, on every deal would be to make at least $10,000 a loan. It's not possible. You know, we certainly do a lot of transactions where only $3,000 is made in that area, and that's okay. It's still money, you know. But that is always my goal. It's not possible. So say someone had $1 million loan, I would only charge them 1 point. You know, that's a $10,000 fee. But again, it's going to be dependent on how many options they have out there. And also, I factor in lender points. I know what the lender's typically going to charge them on this. So I'm not trying to crush anyone. I'm trying to get a deal done. And I think we're very, very, very fair on pricing. I know other shops out there that are very, very heavy on pricing. I feel we're very, very fair on pricing. So when someone asks you how many points, again, your answer is really just it dictates what type of file, how quick and how quickly really they need us to close. But between all of us, there are some other things going on in my head when we do pricing. What will my closing costs be? So borrowers love to ask this, what will my closing costs be? And they just don't understand that, I guess they don't understand, because it's kind of a silly question to ask somebody up front, especially after we've given them all the program details, and that breaks down the lender's points, their closing costs, stuff like that. We've told them our points. The only other closing costs they're going to have is going to be property insurance and title insurance. And they would have to check with those representatives to see what that's going to cost. You have to check with your property insurance representative to see what property insurance costs you for 12 months, you know, if the lender is going to escrow property insurance for 12 months. You have to check with your title representative to see what, you know, all the fees that they're going to charge you or all the fees that state requires. I don't know. I'm not a licensed title professional. I don't know every rule of every single state and every single filing that has to be done to transfer a property from one person to another. So I certainly provide estimates, as everyone sees, on the quotes that we give people just from deals we close. Typically, this is what I'm seeing title insurance charge in those deals, but I do put in that, you know, in parentheses, this is an estimate. Please check with your title insurance person. Property insurance, same thing. I'll put an estimate, but I say the same thing. Please check with your property insurance person, representative. And that's really the main questions you're always going to be asked. We did a training call last week that went over more questions that borrowers will ask you, but those are the main ones. Another main one is, what do you guys do? You'll always be asked that. That's where you go to the company information email and the product sheet, but we're a brokerage company. Don't ever tell anyone we're a direct lender. We're not a direct lender. You know, we work with a little over 100 lenders. We do all types of commercial real estate transactions here. So ground up, rehab, bridge on the temporary side. On the permanent, we do permanent financing loans. And there's only really two categories there. You're either bankable or you got to go into this bank alternate section. That's what we do. We locate the best lender for you, try to get you the best deal we possibly can in the time frame you've given us, and we quarterback the whole entire deal to a close. So we deal with all parties, not just coordinate with the lender and the borrower, of course, but the title company, the insurance company, if there's a homeowner association, if there's a realtor, if there's an HOA involved in the transaction. I can't tell you guys how many times I've had the seller call me. Sellers will call me on transactions. They're angry about something. The realtor is not updating me on what's going on. So we end up doing like everyone's job for some reason, because that's what you have to do to get a deal closed. You have to go above and beyond and coordinate with everyone and just make sure everyone's on the same page. And that's really how a deal gets closed. We're basically done here. There's just one last bullet point. Okay. So sometimes you guys will see me respond like this, or maybe other members in management. When we review a short form, some people do have really difficult transactions where it's almost impossible to get that done. If someone's in a bankruptcy or in a chapter and it's not resolved yet, there's no one's going to lend to them. No one's going to lend to them. They have to resolve that issue first, and even after they resolve that, it's still very hard for them to get financing. Some people, and when you're new to the business, you just don't know. You think everyone that wants to talk to you has a deal, and that's okay, because you have to learn this by doing it. There's going to be a lot of people you talk to that just don't have deals. You're just going to have to learn that the hard way, or just keep taking these trainings until you figure it out. And again, you have all of us as well to tell you if this is a deal or not a deal. But someone may have like a deal that's like really, really hard property type, really low FICO, no exit strategy, in a lawsuit with their partners, something crazy is going on. And, you know, if you want to take the short form, take the short form. If you don't feel confident there yet telling them that this just isn't a transaction, in the back of your head you may know, you may not know. But, you know, when I see a difficult short form, I just cut to the chase with people because I don't want to waste anyone's time. And again, I wish we could save everybody. We can't. You know, I'm sure out of the 1,000 hard money lenders out there, there's probably one lender, one needle in the haystack that will save them. But to find that one lender is going to take, you know, I don't know, a massive amount of time that just none of us have. So I always let people know if they have a really difficult transaction, very, very unlikely to get funded, I just let them know right up front. Again, I always do offer some suggestions, you know, maybe bringing in credit partners, maybe, you know, family and friends can bail them out for now until the situation's over, you know, the bankruptcy or chapter's done for 2 years, then we can get them a takeout loan. Or even just some time, we might be able to put them into something hard money. I always offer suggestions to them, but there is times where we have to tell people, you know, just this is almost an impossible transaction. And again, I'm sure there might be one hard money lender out there that's willing to take the shot. They're going to charge some crazy interest rate in 10 points, but to find them, it would take an enormous amount of time to find that lender. So that's basically it. That's really just kind of how to deal with a borrower. I just want everyone to really kind of feel comfortable about setting the tone of the conversation. You know, if someone asks you something you don't know, it's not a big deal. Just tell them you don't know. You'll get them the answer. Just get the information on the short form. If they are in a purchase and sales agreement or if they are already on the property, it's going to be a refinance. If they're not in a purchase sales agreement, if you want to take the short form information, it's totally up to you. If you don't want to, you don't have to. You know, this is your business. You can just tell them, ma'am, sir, you know, let us know when you enter into that purchase sales agreement. We will need a copy of it. We'll have to be fully executed. But until then, we're not going to be able to get you a direct quote from a lender. But here is our product sheet. If you're interested in rehab loans, they start on page 13. You can see we work with so many rehab lenders. You know, terms are generally the same, but they are a little different from lender to lender. So let's just open up and see if anyone has any questions about things borrowers are throwing at you, questions, or maybe just even situations people are putting you in that's you're not quite comfortable yet. I can explain to you what I do to solve that situation. All right, guys. So everyone's unmuted. Yo, go ahead.
I'm not shy.
Okay, go.
This is Dana, and I. You mentioned the being in chapters. So yes. The Chapter 11 reorganization, there, we don't work with. I hear that. We don't work with lenders that will take someone out of that and help them to get reorganized. That's what I'm hearing.
We've done some calls with lenders where they do say that they will do that. So if you do have a borrower, one second. If you have a borrower that is in a chapter, I just want, you know, you probably know, it severely minimizes their chances of getting funding, you know? And it's going to have to be...
It really limits where they can get it from, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the problem, I'm just saying, I've worked a lot of deals with people in chapters, and I've never gotten any of those lenders that say they do them to do it. And the problem that also happens with chapters is, you know, say they're in a... legal case, you know, with a bank or whoever they owe money to, a lot of times it's not even determined exactly how much money they're going to settle for and eventually have to pay them, you know? So it's hard.
Okay.
You're kind of working on something and you don't know, like, is the payoff lender going to take a lower amount? What if they don't, you know? Really, what I would say is if we're going to get involved in a transaction like that, they've had to come to an agreement, you know? Because a lot of times what will happen is people will approach us and say, well, this lender is coming after me, and I filed this to protect my property.
Sure.
We're in the court system right now, but they don't actually know where it's going to fall. You know, if they say to Wells Fargo, we're going to offer them $1 million for the property and they're going to take it, Wells Fargo may not, you know. Until that payoff lender has said they will take that amount, if that's the situation they're in, and we have proof of a letter stating that, we really can't get involved until then because it's a bunch of what ifs.
Right, right.
And I've done it a million times, just so you know. I've done it a million times where I'm talking to the lawyer of our borrower, and the lawyer's like, they're going to settle for this, and they're going to settle for that, and it never happened. They didn't settle for 3 years down the road, you know?
Right, right. Okay.
So I'm not
hear you.
I'm not saying we can't. I'm just saying when you're in a chapter or, you know, it really severely limits. It severely limits your financing so bad, you know, because so many lenders have a requirement that chapter or BK has to be dismissed for a certain amount of time in order to, you know, in order to help you. But to answer your question, though, Dana, we do actually have a couple lenders in our arsenal that will help people with chapters. But the thing about it is it has to be settled. They have to come to an agreement, and the LTV still needs to work out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know?
Well, so that's like good information.
It's like that one in a million deal, though, out of the chapters that's actually going to work out. You know,
I hear that. That makes sense to me, and I really appreciate the input. Who's growling at me?
I don't know who is growling on the phone.
Sounds like somebody fell asleep and they're snoring.
Yeah.
I thought it was you, Ryan. I thought you were growling at me about asking that question.
I'm sorry, guys. That was that bad on the training call today.
Well, Megan, right. I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, when you were talking about making the forms available to us, would it be possible to put one there that would be for the refinance, the wholesale, and the purchase? Because I'd like to have those questions in front of me, because when I'm talking to potential borrowers, I'd like to be able to at least advise them the kind of information that they're going to have to complete. And I have really gotten to the point where I tell these people several times, when you fill out the application, you absolutely have to put the complete address. I don't know how many times I get them back, oh, well, it's on Main Street. Well, that doesn't help anyone. So, you know, I just like to have all those questions so I can, you know, advise them in advance. This is what we're going to need, and these are the things that you're going to need to be prepared to answer.
Yeah. So we have a paper version of every single business report form. And I
right.
send those out to everyone.
Okay.
So I'll send this out to everyone. I also like the paper version for that reason.
Okay.
Because,
okay.
I mean, like, I know all the questions in my head, obviously, but
mm-hmm.
I just forget something. I did a rehab short form with someone the other day, and I forgot to ask them the ARV.
Oh, my.
And I just was doing it off my head. That's why. So.
Right.
Yeah, okay. I always send the paper versions out to everyone. Just so you know, there's a paper version for every different type of deal. So we have a paper version for permanent, then rehab, ground up, and bridge, and wholesale. There's five different paper versions.
Not available. They're not available on the website, though, right?
We there are paper versions in the portal, but Anthony is in the process of updating those. But the paper versions in the portal.
Okay.
So don't worry about that. I will. I'll send those paper versions out to everyone. You guys can certainly use the website, and I know a lot of you have your own websites. You know, so whatever
we
you
do.
Prefer. Yeah, a lot of people do have their own websites as well. If you're in the IAP Ultra category,
oh, okay.
You have your own website. But mm-hmm. it's totally up to you how you want to do it. I like the paper versions, but just because I like the paper versions doesn't mean everyone else has to like the paper versions.
Right.
I also wanted to say one thing to people as well, and thank you so much for bringing that up about the short forms. I see a lot of people just sending short forms, like sending the short form to the borrower and just expecting them to fill it out. Don't do that. It's very unlikely that the borrower is going to do that. I mean, I do see some
yes.
borrowers.
No, she can just take away. I'm sorry, take away.
Hold on 1 second. I do see some borrowers doing that, but just call them. Do it with them on the phone. It's going to take you, if you have time, it's going to take you like, you know, 10, 15 minutes to say, hey, do you have 10 minutes? I can ask you a couple questions about your deal. You know, so hopefully we can get you a quote, and if you'd like it, you know, help you move forward and get those closed. But you want to, like, build a rapport with your borrower. So what happens is if, you know, an IEP never speaks to the borrower, that's kind of another thing about setting the realistic expectation. Like, they just fill out the short form. They don't have any idea about our process or what happens. And then what happens is I contact them or someone else in management contacts them. The borrower is just totally confused. They don't understand what the process is. They don't understand what's going on. They just filled out a short form because someone told them to, but they don't understand the process. Like, they think if they fill out a short form now, they're automatically qualified for a loan, and we're going to get them a loan. So no one explained that process to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you guys can, it's really helpful if you can just call them for 10, 15 minutes, just get the information from them real quick, you know, find a way to relate with them, talk to them a little bit, they can hear a human voice. If it's someone you know and you've already talked to in the past, yeah, send them the paper version short form if you want them to fill it out in there or have them go to your website. That's not a problem. But I would say just, you know, at least try to talk to your people at least once. Also, another point to that, don't let people overtake advantage of your time. Like, say you do fill out a short form with someone, you take your 15 minutes to do that on the phone with them, we get them a quote, they decide not to move forward, that's not a big deal. Next time they have a deal, and it's a different deal, they now know our process. They got to speak to the IAP, they got to speak to someone who got them a quote in management who's been following up with them probably 3 or 4 times to see if they'll move forward. Now it's their turn to go and put in some effort and fill out a short form on their own, and then they already understand the process. So that's my rule with people. I'll do a short form with you on the phone once. I'll get you the quote if you have a deal. I'll follow up with you to, you know, get you to move forward, keep explaining about the program, the lender, everything I can do to get you to move forward. If they decide not to, it's not a big deal. We can help another transaction, but then they're going to have to take the time to go to the website and fill out the short form. They already got that customer service.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So where I am. Okay.
Good.
I'm sorry. I just have one more quick question.
Yeah,
I am not home right now, which I know you know. And the computer that I'm using right now is really like a tablet. And I have a lot less capability with this than I thought I was going to. And so what it is I have documents that were sent to me by a borrower for a potential loan. But I have no way to upload them because this computer will not allow me to do anything other than download it, and then I can't open it again and put it into the portal. So what do I do? Just follow the emails? I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, if you're in a situation like that, just forward it to me. I'll upload them to the CRM. Is this a borrower that wants to move forward?
Yeah, the borrower has already sent me most of the documents.
Okay, did we get them
by email? They're all PDFs.
Okay. Did we
I could do that?
Sorry.
Yeah, they've already been accepted. They just haven't clicked the accept. I think she's still shopping. So I'm not going to send it until she tells me that she's going to keep going. I mean, I'm not going to bog you down with doing that.
It's not a big deal. You can send them to me. I'll save them in a file. And then if she wants to move forward, you know, I'll certainly go through them and stuff. Also, I want you guys to know, we always get, if someone has a real deal, we always get them one quote, like, as a courtesy. You know, if someone has a real deal, we can get them more quotes. It's not like that's, like, the only quote we could ever get them if they have a real deal. Sometimes it depends on certain things. Like, if they have lower FICO and they don't have much experience and they have a little amount of cash, we only have a couple rehab lenders that are going to take that deal because no one's really, you know, no one's really looking to lend to a new rehabber that's short on money. No one's going to do that. If you're not sure if we could get them a second quote, just let me know. Send me an email or something.
But
if someone does have a real deal, like great liquidity, experience, FICO, I could certainly get them another quote. What we typically try to do with people is if we're going to run around and get them a lot of quotes, just, you know, if they could just sign a fee agreement with us just saying, hey, I do want to work with us. If they really want to work with us, I'll get them 5 quotes, you know?
Okay.
I
think her problem is time because she was actually supposed to close today and her lender fell through. And so now she's, like, trying to get an extension, but she doesn't know if she has enough time for 2 weeks. But she already has an appraisal in hand from, like, February 9th. And so Chris Perez replied to me that we'll try to use it, but we can't guarantee it. And so this is like a stickler thing to her right now. She's like, well, if you can't use it, then I'm wasting my time. And
she's probably – she's in a situation where she's getting frustrated at what people are saying to her. So she's kind of taking that frustration out on you a little bit, you know?
Okay.
Right. Most lenders don't accept other lenders' appraisals, unfortunately. And I know that sucks because she just got one. We do have a couple lenders that will, but the appraisal will have to be assigned back over to the lender. But typically, it's only 30 days. I do have one that will accept it. What's the borrower's name real quick?
Hunt. Belinda Hunt.
H-U-N-T?
H-U-N-T, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Okay, and I mean, I've got the emails. I'll just shoot them over to you. But her FICO is actually higher than she thought it was. It's closer to the sevens, a little over seven. And she wanted 90% LTV. So I don't know. She's just really trying to get a better situation. I don't think she was really happy with the percentage.
I understand. I understand.
But she's in the bind.
I know. Mm-hmm. They all are.
Yeah, I know. That's what keeps us in business, right?
I know. No, exactly. But that's what we do. Like, we solve, and thank you for bringing that up, because we do solve people's problems. I mean, that's why we have a section in this business. Sometimes I'll get short forms where the borrower literally has no problem. Like, they're clearly bankable. They have another offer that's, like, bankable, and I'm, like, saying VIP. Like, what can I do? I mean, they already clearly have a solution, and I can't beat bank rates because I might be able to get them the same, but then they're paying a broker fee. It doesn't make any sense. So the fact that she has a problem is something that we can solve. So I actually have a lender that is in Georgia, and will accept her appraisal, I believe, if it's in within 90 days, but it has to be reassigned to them.
Okay.
I'm going to go through this. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm sending them over to you now.
Yeah, send her docs over to me. I'm gonna get her another quote by the end of the day and send it to her and you, and I think actually we might be able to solve her problem.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. You're the bomb. You're awesome.
Yeah, thanks. I can probably get her a higher LTV as well, so I can probably get her a higher LTV than she was offered at an upfront draw. But the thing with the lender is, They do this high LTV thing, like I'm telling you, but they have a pretty strict liquidity requirement. So I got to go over her short form real quick when we get off the phone to make sure she has enough cash on hand to qualify for this. But I can get her better rates and terms and solve her problem.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yep. Laurie, did you have any other questions?
Mm-mm. Nope. Okay. I'll let someone else ask a question.
Yeah. Anyone else have any other questions?
Megan, this is Phil. I'm going back to the bankruptcy. The general rule is 2 years after it was discharged for most lenders. Is that correct?
Yeah, for permanent financing lenders, it's got to be 2 years after it's discharged.
Okay. How about a temporary? Is temporary more flexible?
Yes. Temporary is much more flexible. So hard money is much more flexible. And everyone's going to kind of have their own rule, too. So I don't want to put like a general rule in it for hard money, because I know there's definitely hard money lenders out there that after it has been cleared up and dismissed, that they would do the loan a month later, you know?
Okay. The perm is the one that the general rule is 2 years or 3 years,
two
right?
2 years. Yep. You can't have a bankruptcy, a foreclosure, a mortgage late, like nothing like that. So the perm is very strict on hard money is less strict on that, but we don't be upfront. We do have hard money lenders that are still strict on that too.
Okay.
It's just going to depend, unfortunately, on the hard money lender.
Okay.
Hey, Megan, it's Anthony. I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Hey, if a seller is taking a second, can that be considered as down payment?
Not usually, no.
Yeah, they want you to have some cash in the game too, right?
They want you to have skin in the game, yeah. And just kind of always you know, it's just like the saying in the business, like you have to have cash in the game. We do work with lenders that do allow seller seconds, but very few of our lenders allow that these days. We have a couple permanent financing lenders on the product sheet. We got permanent financing lenders 8 and 9 allow seconds. We do have a couple of hard money lenders that allow seconds, and we've done some recent lender calls with them, but there are few of them. It just depends on the lender. If you look on the product sheet, programs 8 and 9 will allow a seller second up to an 80% CLTV, which stands for combined LTV.
Mm-hmm.
But the borrower still has to come down with 20. They still have to come down with their 20%. Yeah, that has to be their money. Yeah. We have a couple hard money lenders. We recently just did a lender call with a lender 25 on our product sheet, they are a hard money lender. They do bridge loans, fix and flips, really cool programs, and they allow seller seconds. And it could be the full down payment. One thing, though, they did say to us in the lender call that they still want 3 months of bank statements. So even though they're going to allow that second to come in on the fix and flip and really fully fund the down payment and the closing costs, obviously someone's got to pay for their closing costs, we still need to show them where this money's coming from, you know?
Okay. And also the reserves for the interest-only payment?
Yeah. You know, most rehab lenders are really concerned about those reserves as well because, you know, this property is typically vacant and not producing income. So if you're going to have the loan for 6 months or a year, like, how do you plan to pay that back, you know?
Okay. And I also have a guy. He has been running into problems with the numbers are there, and his income producing, great tenant, but he has his tenant is actually like United Way or United Health Services or something like that, and they, mm-hmm. they house addicts, and he's been having problems. No one wanted to do the permanent financing for him.
Yeah.
We have lenders that...
what's the property type? Is it a single-family residence?
A single-family residence.
Yeah, so I've been seeing this a lot lately, I guess over the past, I don't know, year or so, where a lot of times these single-family residences are being used as, like, they're being used for, like, commercial use. And I don't mean, like, regular rental use where you just have a tenant there and a lease, like, an assisted living facility is being run out of them, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, a place for, you know, rehab, like you're saying, or maybe it's a group home. And it's this, like, really weird thing in commercial lending because there's this section in commercial lending of 1-4 unit investment properties. And they're 1-4 unit investment properties. You're either doing a fix and flip, you're building them ground up, or they're just rental properties. And then there's this section in commercial lending of pure commercial property. You know, like an assisted living facility or a medical office, you know, and they're two totally different types of lenders that lend on those things. So that's where it starts becoming difficult to place, you know, because a lender that would lend on like an assisted living facility or a medical facility is looking for like a pure commercial property to lend on, you know.
Definitely.
I think you sent a short form into processing the other day, right?
Yes.
Okay. We do have the only thing I could ever possibly do for that person is hard money, just so you're aware. You know what? What is that guy? What's the borrower's FICO? What's the main borrower's FICO?
He was, I think he may have been 720 plus. I'm not right in front of my computer at this point, but I think he had a good score. Everything is perfect all the way through, and he's a little frustrated because he's went through, you know, several other people. They tell him he's going to do it and get their appraisal. And then when the appraisal go out, they're like, you know, making notes that it's a, you know, assisted living facility. And that's when the borrower, you know, so I really, you know, I'm an investor. So I, you know, I understand them. So I'm like, wow, I don't want to waste your time either. So let's, you know, kind of just figure it out.
Yeah, so he's in a hard spot, and this keeps happening to me on these deals because he's dealing with a single-family residence that he's using for, like, business use, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he has a medical facility where people are, like, in a hospital-type setting or, like, you know, nurse-type setting. You know, it's a single-family residence. So do you know, is this a refinance or a purchase?
Refi.
Okay. How long has he owned the property?
Nine months.
Okay. He doesn't have.
And his term loan is coming to an end in, you know, 3 months. So that's why he was looking for the permanent. And he didn't want to try to get into another term loan.
Why don't you send that short form directly to me? I want to take a look at
it.
Did anyone from processing say anything to you about it?
They were saying that they wanted to they wanted to shop it around. I think it was the guy didn't want to give his address yet until we could kind of give some information. But I was mentioning the rehab loan for him, but also, when they send out an appraisal for the rehab loan, they're going to be expecting the property to be kind of vacant and have some repairs to do, and then he's in the same situation.
Just send the short form to me. I'll get back to you on it by
okay.
tonight.
All right.
He doesn't have the 2 years of seasoning, where we do have one permanent financing lender, actually. I was just in a situation like this that if he has not altered that property in any way, like as long as it still like looks like a regular house, because sometimes when people get in these group home situations, what they do is like they'll add a ton of bathrooms or square footage or something to the property that turns it more into like a group home facility, you know? If
yeah.
he hasn't done that, we do have a permanent financing lender that will just have it appraised as an SFR.
Okay.
But the problem is they require 2 years of seasoning, and this guy only has not even one.
Yeah, definitely.
He sent it to me. Let me check out his LTVs because they could possibly still do it, but at a low LTV, I need to see if it checks out. The only
okay.
other thing we could do is we would have to put him into another hard money loan, but he's probably in a hard money loan right now if his term is
exactly.
And
exactly.
what I would suggest him to do, if I can't get him into something permanent, see if what we could do is we could I'll still run it by the permanent financing lender that may be able to take it after 2 years. If we can prove to the current hard money lender that they would take it, but he needs 2 years of seasoning, maybe the current lender would just extend and give him another 12 months.
Yeah, that was the other thing that I mentioned to him is just, you know, because it didn't make sense if he's already in one, trying to get into another one when you can just extend because, you know, especially if you're making the payments, they don't want to just take your property.
Yeah. No one's trying to take that property and deal with people, you know, that are recovering and stuff. That's not a property
exactly.
a lender wants to take over. That's a very specialty property. But one thing I would say, too, is if we can get this done for him, what I would say to him in a nice way is that when the appraiser does come out, it's probably a best thing to make it a movie day or something with everyone. You know? Get everyone out
exactly.
of the property. And it's not even because of what they're using the house for. It could be a group home. It could be a home for the elderly. Like, when an appraiser comes into a property and there's too many people in it like that, they're going to get overwhelmed, you know?
Yep.
And they might miss things. You know, we don't want them to think the wrong thing. Let's just let them think it's a single-family residence and compare it to another single-family residence. If they see all those people in there, they're going to be like, there's no way this is a single-family residence.
Exactly.
You know? So, yeah, just send it to me if you don't mind. I'll take a look at it, let you know if we got a shot with him or not. But if I can prove a takeout, I think it'd be good for him to have a conversation with his hard money lender. Hey, I've paid you on time for 8 months. You know, this is a commercial property. I can get a refinance, but I need 2 years of ownership. You know, can that possibly happen? I may have a lender that will do it, though, after the 12 months. So just if you don't
okay.
mind sending it to me, I'll get back to you on it.
Okay, definitely. And then the other option would just be, you know, once that tenancy is up, don't renew it.
What do you mean?
Just renew with that tenant that's housing the assisted living facility.
With the tenant inside?
Yeah, definitely. Because of the appraisal.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I think if he plans to hold on to the property long term, I think he really wants that takeout loan, right?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. The other question I have for you, a lot of new investors or investors that got hit, you know, during the bubble, they're trying to get back in the business and, you know, bringing on JVs and things like that. They want the JV on the title, but they don't want the JV on the business. On the loan, personal guarantee in it.
Mm-hmm.
So is that just a no, or is that something we can do, or is just we have to tell them that you have to put the partner on the LLC or the corporation?
Yeah, that always confuses me too when people ask stuff like that. You know, like this isn't what you're pitching to me, but someone will say like, oh, well, someone I know is giving me money for a deal, but they don't want to be on the loan or part of the title or anything. It's like, you know, who does that? But in your question, if someone is – whoever is on the title of that property is going to be involved in a loan unless they're coming off title at closing. That's just how it always
okay.
works.
Okay.
So, yeah. So whoever is on the title, like on that deed and the title documents and everything, will have to be a par loan. They will be vetted out. If they don't want to be a par loan, then they have to come off. They have to come off the deed.
Okay. And they're trying to get a little jazzy with it. I understand what they're trying to do now. But they want to, the partner wants to give the money, but wants to give the money and be a second behind the rehab loan.
It's going to just be a lender that allows that. And we really only have one rehab lender that we've talked to that will allow that. They're program 25. What state is the deal in? Because they're not in every state.
That particular deal, I think it was in maybe New Hampshire or something like that.
Okay. I can run it by them because that's not a state they're in. We did do a lender call with another lender that may allow that. Just so you know, though, just so everyone knows, though, most lenders do not allow seconds behind them. They just don't. They don't want – of course, no one's going to be in front of them. They're going to be first, and they don't want a second behind them either. So just let them know. We'll try our best, but most lenders don't allow that. If you – you don't have a short form on the New Hampshire deal, do you?
No, I didn't completely take it because – I don't think they were under contract. It was just, you know, hey, you know, get your stuff together and figure out, you know, exactly where you are, how much money you got, and then, you know, let's discuss from there.
Okay. Yeah, let me just look at something real quick. Do you have any more questions? Well, I just want to look at this one lending program to see if they would, that would work there. Anthony, did you have any more questions while I'm just looking up this program?
No, I'm fine. That's pretty much it. I had one more question.
Let them figure their stuff out. The one lender we work with that does allow seconds, they're not in New Hampshire. They're New Jersey, DE, Maryland, DC, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida. So they are up like the East Coast. You know, I could potentially run it by them. You know, it's not a state that looks like they're licensed in, but I mean, we're not way off, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I told them I'll check back with them and, you know, once he gets his things back, you know, together as far as his ARV and things like that, give me a call. So we'll be in touch. But I just wanted to know those, you know, type questions where, you know, you get those crappy investors that are trying to do some crappy things and, you know, you want to kind of just be able to give them an answer.
Yeah, they're just trying to structure the loan a way that most lenders don't do it, you know. I get that because everyone wants to do it their own way. But what I tell people is just, you know, most lenders do not allow seconds these days. They just don't, you know. You know, a lot of people get confused about that, especially on the 1-4 units, because you can get, like, a home equity line of credit on top of your regular residential mortgage. But I always explain to people, like, we do commercial loans here. Like, we do investment loans here. So I know everyone thinks of residential when they think of 1-4, but we're doing them commercially. It's a business transaction. You know, someone doesn't want to have too many people, too much debt on a property or too many people having rights to the property. It just gets a little too crazy for most people. But we do have one lender we just did a recent call with that will allow it, and I can run if they do figure their stuff out, I'll run it by them to see if they'll do it.
Okay. Yeah, and my perspective on it, and that's why I didn't push it too much, was that we really wouldn't be able to do that because it's still like because he's taking a second, it's not like he's a part of the deal. As a borrower, he's a part of the deal as a lender. So you still didn't have any money out of it, any skin in the game.
Yeah, I mean, why isn't there a way to just structure the deal so that he can just, instead of take, why does he have to take a second? Why can't, is it because he's putting the down money down on the deal?
Yes, he's putting the down money down on the deal as a partner, but the way they're structuring it, he's not really a partner, he's a lender. And he's just a second mortgage lender instead of a partner. So the first person, the person that's going on the loan, doesn't really have any cash. So the, you know, to me, the lender wouldn't want to do the deal.
Yeah, I mean, what they need to do, you know, they may not get it, but they just need to form an LLC together, the person who has maybe the experience and the person that has the cash, just become 50-50 members, and just both, you know, your company is going to be the borrower, someone's going to have to personally guarantee, and then just let the lender be the lender, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
That's what they need. Sometimes when people say that to you, they're maybe not explaining something else, like maybe they have a financial crime or low FICO, or there's something someone's telling them where they're not qualifying for financing, so sometimes
mm-hmm.
maybe it's something else that they're not ready to disclose yet. But if they can just give it to us, I can tell them, like, what lenders would be okay with something like that and what lenders wouldn't. You know, if they don't tell
yeah,
us,
definitely.
I don't know what I'm up against until it hits us.
Definitely.
So, all right. Did you have any other questions?
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay, I know we're running a little over. Go ahead.
I got one question. Sorry. On some of the product on the product sheet, on
mm-hmm.
some of the products, it says 65% ARV, but it doesn't typically say how much down they want. So it's kind of confusing, especially after you look at 20 products. Whether, you know, they're going to lend up to 75%. I understand that part. They're going to lend up to 75% ARV, but they're not
mm-hmm.
saying they want 20% down, or they're not saying they want 10% down on the product sheet.
Yeah, but
if
remember,
that makes
it's
sense.
Always going to be a range. It's always it's,
okay.
It's not like you're in this program. We just always do 10% down. It depends
okay.
on their experience, that borrower's FICO, the profit that's going to be on the loan. You know, that someone's going
okay.
to be buying a deal that's going to make good profit, because that's going to limit what the lender lends to. Like, if you're buying
of
a
course.
Deal and there's just not enough profit in there, the lender is going to limit their loan to you. But on all of the deals, when you see LTV, LTC, ARV, there are if you read it, like, I'll put in there, like, lender will finance 80 to 90% of the purchase price and 100%
okay.
of the renovations, but the loan is going to be capped at 70% of the ARV.
75.
Yeah, going up a program 25. So I always put what they'll lend on the initial purchase, but, again, it's going to
okay.
be a range. It's typically always 100% of the renovations.
Yeah.
But that ARV cap is just a cap, just so you know. Like, what they're really going to lend is, you know, the 80% of the purchase price, 100% of the renovations, but they're going to make sure their loan amount does not exceed 70%
that
of the
amount.
Price.
Yeah,
they don't want to lend you too much. So that's where they'll cap things. And if they do have to cap things, what would happen there is just the LTV towards the purchase would go down. That's what they would do. Typically, lenders always fund 100% of the renovations, although it's done in draws, because they want to make sure that the property gets fully finished, you know? And what
definitely.
They'll lower is they'll lower the initial LTV on the purchase to get them where they feel they need to be. So, yeah, just read that section a little bit more, because on every single one of those program details, it does say how much they will lend towards the initial purchase
okay.
price. Yeah.
Okay.
And then that ARV is just a cap. Like, that's just where the loan is capped. You know, really, when you're explaining it to someone, you just tell them, like, you know, 80% of the purchase price, 100% of renovations, but the lender will cap the loan at some point, you know?
Definitely.
And that's just because, too, sometimes people try to buy things and, like, the rehab is, like, much more than the purchase price, so that's why there's always that cap there. Does that make sense, Anthony?
Yeah, definitely. It makes perfect sense. Yeah, I had a deal the other day. Person wanted to get it at the purchase price was like $200,000, and they wanted to put another $10,000 in, and you know that always means $15,000 really. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
and your ARV is $245,000. You're at like 90%. There's no way, you know, anybody's gonna lend on this. You need
to
focus on getting a better deal.
Yeah, I hear you.
Hi, Megan. This is Daryl. I apologize. I know we've been on for quite a while, but I have a couple
okay.
questions regarding a couple deals that I have in the CRM right now.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Very quickly, the very first deal, I got a deal where a gentleman, David Warnaker, He's an outside referral and very, very experienced, 34 years in the business. He's bought land and developed land. Well, not developed land, but gotten the land ready for development with all of the easements, entitlements, and the rezoning in different parts of the country where, you know, he's done that for over 1,300 homes. He has a property now down in Florida, and I submitted the deal. Or actually, I sent Ryan an email, and Ryan responded back saying that, you know, we don't do land deals. But I recall the same situation. I had another guy out of Texas who owned a cattle ranch, and he was buying 183 acres, and you sent an email back saying that you did have someone that would do the loan for the raw land. So do we or do we not have someone that can loan on just land?
We do have, like, we work with, like, Silver Arch. They're one lender that will lend on just raw land, but their minimum loan amount, I believe, is $2
million. Okay, okay, that's the situation. Okay, okay. Mr. Warnaker, that's what he's looking for. He's got a piece of property now, and it's worth about, it appraised about a year and a half ago before he got the zoning and all done for 4.5. And recently, Cushman and Wakefield, which is one of the larger land brokers out of Florida, they're second behind CBRN. They actually offered to list it at 9.5, I believe. But here's the deal. He's looking to buy. He's looking to refinance it because there's no debt encumbered on the land right now. His partner is ailing. He's you know, he has some health issues, and he wants out of an elderly man. And so Mr. Warnaker wants to go ahead and refinance it at, and pull out about $2 million to pay his partner off because that's what the equity share is for the partner. So can I resubmit this, or can I get this over to you, and then you can kind of tell me where to go with this?
Yeah. Just send it to me. I'll take a look at it. You know, we just have to make sure he has an exit strategy, and he's going to have a lot of cash on hand because a $2 million interest-only payment is pretty large, you know, especially if you're looking at 10% interest-only loan, you know?
Okay.
Just send it to me. See what kind of cash he has on hand because, again, it's a lot. Obviously, if it's free and clear, his closing costs could be taken from the cash out. There are a couple other lenders. I mean, just land deals in general, like, have to be larger loan amounts. There's another lender that we work with named WBL that just lends on land, but it's kind of like a cluster, to be honest with you. So
it's kind of like a what? I don't know. I can barely hear. There's some,
background
noise. I don't know if that's what you're...
It's very difficult, basically, to get it done sometimes is just the point, you know? Land deals are just kind of hard to do, you know?
Okay.
But send it to me.
I'll
take a look at it. I got to see how much cash he has on hand and what his exit strategy is.
Okay, awesome. All right, so what I'll do is I'll get him back on the line. You just sent me an email. In fact, since we've been on this conference. Now, my other question is this. I have another guy, Ronnie Richardson. He's in the CRM right now. I did a permanent finance short form on Mr. Richardson. He had several. He had three properties in the Washington D.C. area that he sold recently. And what he did was he picked up a single family in North Carolina in a very exclusive community where the properties run about anywhere from 1.2 to about 2.4 million supposedly, right? And what he did was he ended up entering into a loan. He's only on the property for a month. But what happened was his original financing, when he was going to buy the property, and he was under contract to avoid losing his earnest money deposit and losing the deal because he knew there was a ton of equity, he ended up having to take an alternate bridge loan just to get the deal done. And he's about $300,000 into the deal out of pocket where he purchased it for $950,000. And so what he's trying to do now is that he wants to go ahead and refinance out of that bridge loan into something more long-term, 5 years minimum, I guess, or more. And so he's in the system now, and is that something that we can do? I know we do have that new lender with 1 month seasoning. The only thing is that he doesn't have the rentals and all of that going into a traceable bank account because he's only 1 month in. And, you know, the first month's rent was, you know, he'd done something with whatnot. But nonetheless, he just simply wants to refinance.
That one got sent to me today, and I'm sorry, I've just talked to so many people today that I haven't gotten a chance to respond to you on that one.
Okay, great.
I got that one at like noon today, so I'll get to him by tonight. But yeah, we can certainly. I'm looking at this mission now. Processing, send it to me. I just got to run some numbers to make sure his numbers. You know, I guess I got to put in the HOA fees, you know, and everything to see what his loan amount would be. And for the 1 month seasoning program, the property doesn't have to be rented out. If you look in the special notes, if you look on the special notes on there, it actually says on there. The appraiser was just going to go off the 1007. The 1007 is when an appraiser comes out and compares local market rents from similar like properties. It's like a separate.
Oh, okay. Great.
So regardless if the property is rented or not, that's how that lender handles it. So, I can put him in 1 month. His mid FICO score just needs to be 660 or higher. And I'm trying.
That's awesome. Okay. Yeah, because he said 720. We pulled 720, but he was going off Credit Karma, so I had him do the tri-merge with Credit Check Total, and his middle score, his scores are 680, 685, 687. So he's right around a 685, I believe, or 684 as the middle score. So he meets that criteria, 660.
Awesome. We can certainly help him. I'll get you a quote on him by tonight. I'll be working late tonight, so I'll send it to you and him.
Okay, great. And I'll send over Mr. Warnaker's just his preliminary summary, and then go back in because I didn't do a short. Now, real quick, Megan, last question: if I need to go ahead and do a short form on the guy that owns the land down in Florida, the 78 acres, like I said, has been zoned and whatnot for 111 apartment units. What form should I go into the system and use? Is that for the refinance? Because this one is the one we're talking about. He wants to pull out $2 million. To pay off his partner. Which form should I go in and use on that one?
I would use the bridge. I would really use the bridge on him. I would get. But if you want to just get some general information on that deal and just email it to me, let me run it by a couple of our lenders that do land just to make sure that they'll do it. You know?
Okay. And what? Give me a couple specific questions. I've got quite a bit, but what are just a couple specific questions that I need to ask, Mr. Warnaker?
Yeah. Really just need to know kind of like the main things, like, you know, how is the land owned? Is it owned in an entity or how is it owned right now?
LLC, okay.
Yeah, just want to know, obviously, what is the value of the land? When was it last appraised? You know, how does he know that? You know, so I could probably tell you last appraised this date, blah, blah, blah. And here's what the appraisal came back. How much debt does he own on the land, of course? But I think you told me it was free and clear. But if it's free and clear, just put free and clear in there. Just probably what generally, obviously the loan amount he wants is $2 million, but why he needs it, and that would be a partner buyout, you know, that you explained. We definitely though need to know how much cash he has on hand, because the biggest thing with him is going to be how is he, you know, if we get him a $2 million interest only loan, how is he going to make those interest only payments? Like, does he have another business that makes a lot of money or something? Like, how's he going to pay that, you know?
I got you. Okay.
That's the hardest part of getting these stupid land loans done, is that land is not producing any money. It doesn't do anything typically to produce money. I mean, I understand like farms and stuff do, but, you know, it's just so hard because they have to have so much cash on hand for the lender to even consider it. That's the only reason we kind of shy away from them because, you know, in general, people are not cash rich. A lot of people are cash poor, and that's why they're looking for a loan, you know?
Exactly. Okay. I got you.
So, and then really with the land, I need to know what's his exit strategy. Like, how does he plan to pay off the hard money lender and get out of that loan? Because I can only do this as a hard money loan. I can't do it as a permanent financing loan because, again, the property is not producing any money.
Awesome. Okay. All righty. I got it. And then he's also sent over quite a bit of information. He's sent over his resume.
That'd be great. If you could just get that information from him. I love when people send over their resumes. It's probably like the one most important document I'm always looking for. And rarely, there's a lot of real estate investors don't have one. So, you know, when you get one from someone, it just kind of shows you and it even shows the lender, like, this person took the time to put a professional resume together. It makes them look really good. People don't even understand how good it makes them look.
He's already provided me with the concept plan, an actual plan. He's provided me with the last appraisal that was done, a 54-page appraisal on the land, the 78 acres. He's provided me with his resume and then also with a cover letter, of course, and with a company profile. And like I said, he's been in business for over 32 years, and he's done this same type of project, he and his partner, for, you know, all across the country. They operate Florida, Nevada, Arizona, Texas. So they've actually gone and purchased land and kind of gotten it ready with all the entitlements and, like I say, zoning for the developer to come in and start shovel, you know, put infrastructure and stuff like that. So that's their primary niche. And so right now, like I said, his biggest deal is that his partner needs the cash as quickly as possible because of the health issues, and he doesn't want to sell it and whatnot. He wants to keep it because he understands the future value. And by the way, real quick, just as a little tidbit, I'll put this in the email as well. It's right in the corridor between Orlando and Tampa, where they're doing a lot of build-up, and this is about 15 minutes from Legoland, so there's a high possibility, not high possibility, there's a high growth, there's a growth spurt in that particular area, you know, due to Disneyland and things like that, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he's got a prime piece of land. I'll send it all over to you, Megan. I'm not going to hold you any longer. Thank you so much for Richardson's file. I look forward to receiving that, and I'll send this information on Mr. Warnicker. His name is David Warnicker. I'll send that over to you with all of the attachments that he sent as well for you to
take a look at. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Megan.
Yeah, of course, of course. Just send it to me. I promise you I'll get to it. Guys, I know this call went so over. I apologize, but I wanted to get to everyone's questions. My phone is actually going to die. I called in on my cell phone, and we've been on the charge very well when I got in. But if anyone has any other questions about the training or anything that anyone's asking you, please just shoot me an email, and I will respond to everyone within 24 hours. And I'll also send this call out to everyone, guys. Thank you again so much for being on the training. Again, I apologize it went over so late.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.